Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in rainy Montclair, New Jersey.
Aw.
Wow, rainy. My sister's in Denver. She sent us photos of hail happening yesterday, so frozen rain. And we have 100 plus degree weather out here, and we're pretty much staying inside today.
Well, it's perfect here, so let me just tell you.
That is awesome. The Midwest wins Jeez. Today.
No.
Yeah, get back to me in February.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
What's happening in studios, projects, fun things, designers, clients?
Getting ready for my twins' first birthday tomorrow.
That's a big deal.
It's actually
Happy
today.
Birthday.
The real birthday is today. So it's been 1 year and doing a little party tomorrow.
Oh, yay. That's so great. Congratulations to all of you.
Did you guys decide on the cake? What are you doing for the cake?
We're doing cupcakes. Oh. We're doing cupcakes. But yesterday we did this. Do you know what a cake smash is?
I can imagine.
First year cake
yeah,
smash.
So I guess it's a thing apparently. And we did that yesterday where the girls, do a little photo shoot.
They get to eat their own cake?
Pretty much, and get to roll around in it. So it's been a year, and they've now been introduced to sugar and all that stuff. So it's all downhill from here. That's what's going on around here.
Unless you're my granddaughter who can't stand to be messy. She wouldn't touch the stuff.
Well, I can't stand it. I don't understand. I don't think I was ever a baby because I can't stand to have food on my face or my hand or anything. So I don't get it.
Nolan, that was perfect.
Zoe and Roxy have no problem with it.
Sandy, what's happening for you? What's in the studio?
Well, so within days of recording this podcast, I was renewed again as a woman-owned business. So very, very timely. This time they added an office on-site visit. And so that was just a little more, not nerve-wracking, but, just another step. But again, this year's process was really, really easy. From the work standpoint, I'm building 6 templates for an international financial services company, a template and a presentation for a large healthcare system. So just busy doing things I love.
That's awesome. Well, outside the summer heat here, which isn't always normal, I've got lots of travel. Later this week, I head to Atlanta, to Milwaukee, to Chicago, and then to Connecticut, all separate meetings, just back to back, and then finally home for a week. So a little bit of business travel going on. And, we got this really cool project. It's really funny. One of the meetings I'm going to, one of those ones listed, I'm doing storyboarding versus designing. So basically, the client is supplying all the presentations. It turns out we weren't actually expecting that. And they're just saying, here they are, they're final, and everything is done, and you got to run them as is. So the production company has asked me if I can allocate some of the budgeted design time that's going to be unused to creating a visual storyboard. It's a large arena presentation or a large arena. I mean, this is a very large meeting. It has a nice big ultrawide. Okay, it's a very huge size ultrawide. The pixel count isn't dramatically phenomenal. I mean, it's like 4,800 pixels wide. I mean, it's pretty good, but it physical size is huge. And there's just a lot of different configurations of IMAG pips and 16:9 presentations and awards with 1:1 photos overlaid with I mean, there's just all these variations. And we had this conference call with all the department heads. Just got really confusing. So after that call, I got a call that said, hey, could you put together one of your storyboards? I know we didn't actually budget it, but we're going to have time. So here's what's really cool about this whole thing. Outside, it's the type of stuff I love. It's organizing, it's designing and stuff like that. I have guys supplying SolidWorks and Vectorworks and, just these amazing renderings and stage plots and just tons of details that you need in order to know how you're going to design things for these large, really cool events. For the visual storyboard, I'm going to do the whole thing in PowerPoint. It's just basically, it shows the ultra wide, and it's a visual walkthrough of every step of the meeting. You know, here's this presenter, and here's what their configuration is. Here's the awards. Here's what their configuration is. Here's where the IMAG look is. So everybody knows exactly what everything is just by a visual reference. And yeah, so it's all PowerPoint still. It's kind of unique and fun. And yeah, it'll keep me busy for 2-3 days.
And can we talk about our joint news, I guess, all three of us?
Absolutely. I think I know what you're talking about.
Let's
jumping into news, but I think I know what you're talking about.
Okay, all three of us were renewed as PowerPoint MVPs.
Yes. Congratulations, you two. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
I'll have to put some celebration little sound effects in. Woohoo!
Exactly.
And I guess transitioning to news, there's a new MVP on the scene, right?
Yes,
right.
There is.
Down under, Emma Bannister, who runs the presentation studio in Sydney, is the newest MVP.
Welcome, Emma. The Presentation Guild survey has been released. I have links to where you can access it in the notes. We've got great insights. This year we went around the world with the survey, and 204 respondents gave us insights into what it means to be a presentationist in 2017. Just a sneak peek.
Wait. Would that be 2018 or 2017?
The survey was conducted in 2017. The report is dated 2018. Yeah, it was the end of the year. Yes.
Wow. Time is just flying.
It is. And here's this. We have so much data that we took an extra amount of time cutting it and slicing it and dicing it to make sure that it was as insightful as possible for.
Can you give a few highlights?
You bet. Okay. There's my Minnesota coming through. Here, just top level, 56% of us are ages 36 to 55. Not surprisingly, to me anyway, 55% of us are female. We average about 16 and a half years of experience.
Oh, wow.
Only 34% of us are full-time. That means employed or self-employed 35 hours a week. But those of us who are full-time, we earn between $50,000 and $75,000 a year.
Hmm.
Yep. Among the self-employed, most of us bill an hourly rate in the range of $50 to $150 an hour. So we're fairly educated. Okay, so these are this is a sneak peek, but I really encourage you to go on, visit the link and get the survey, which is free to members, by the way, $69 to non-members. So I just say join at $99 a year and you'll get a whole lot more benefit than just the survey.
That is very awesome. I will be looking at that later today. Industry news. I got a little one here. SVG and icons, or I should say the icon library in PowerPoint. I personally have seen kind of an uptick in use of SVG over the past, I'd say, 3-4 months, just in client projects coming to us. As example, we just rolled out a large national sales meeting, or NSM, template, and the theme graphic we used in the template was an SVG because that client, in reviewing a lot of their content that's going to be using and modifying to fit the larger screen aspect ratio for this meeting, they're using a ton of SVGs in their own content. So that was kind of good and exciting. It made it easy on us.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I don't know if anybody's noticed this, Microsoft made an update to the internal icon library fairly recently.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, there are no new icons, so don't everybody get excited. Yeah, it's not that. It's functionality. We can now select multiple icons. So when you go into the library, there's little checkboxes. You can select a whole bunch of them, or however many you want, and then just insert all of them all at the same time versus find one, insert one, find the next one, insert one.
Now, that's been the behavior from day one on the Mac.
Oh, definitely was not on
now,
the Windows.
We didn't have icons as early as PC did, but once we did get them, which I guess was not maybe like 6 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago. That's been the behavior. So it's interesting.
I have not noticed it until recently. So maybe it's me just not noticing to notice it, but it is an upgrade over when it was originally released, but maybe it's not as timely as I thought it is.
Well,
and then kind of annoyingly, they like layer them on top of each other, a little bit. So come on, if you're going to do that, just lay them out horizontally.
Troy, I noticed it a while ago too. I thought maybe it, I noticed the behavior, and yes, it does stack on top of each other like the Mac, but I think I didn't consider it as big of an aha moment because I don't use the PowerPoint icons as often as I should. And maybe I just,
that's fine. Well, I mean, you go to Noun Project, you know, yeah. go to other places, yeah. you know, it's funny. We've been screaming for the icon library for years and now we don't use it.
Well, but, habit, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's mm-hmm. for the average user who, mm-hmm. but still, I mean, I use the Noun Project, plugin all the time. Mm-hmm. And I also use the website because you can bring in SVGs that way. So yep. sometimes I'll actually search using the plugin and then.
Right. And then go to the site. Find
something. Oh, I do the same thing. Yep.
So we have like a breaking news thing. Our last episode was on, sections, yes. right? So we filled a whole episode on sections and we did kind of a gripe session at the end where we said, we wish sections could do this. We wish, you know, Microsoft would add that. And in like 24 hours, one of our favorite developers, Jamie Garach, added some of those, our wish list.
Exactly.
To U Tools. So this is an amazing thing on the Mac and the PC that it was able to do this so quickly. So if you do use U Tools, download the latest, it's there. And it's not in the ribbon, it's just in the right-click menu, as we were talking about. So if you've installed U Tools, just click, you know, right-click a section and it'll say send to the end, send to the beginning, mm-hmm. or you can send it anywhere in between other named sections. Yeah. So it's exactly what we
and
asked
that was
for.
Even better. Jamie took all of our ideas, mashed them together and said, we could just make all these options available. You know, you wanted send to beginning, send to end.
Yeah.
I was really about, hey, I want to move them up. You know, I'm thinking more large conferences and I want to move this doctor's been reordered in the agenda. So I just want to move him up three spots. It's all there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Jamie, you are awesome. Thank you so much. That is just, it was awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
Definitely worth the price of admission just for that one.
Indeed.
Anything else?
So, guys, I think it's time I excuse you.
Okay.
All right.
Get out of here.
Nolan, I think we're being kicked out. You ready?
Ourselves. Yeah, we're going to go to the bar.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Lori Collar from TLC Creative Services based here in Southern California.
And I'm Nancy Duarte based in the Silicon Valley.
Well, I am so proud and honored to bring this podcast featuring a discussion around women-owned businesses or women in our presentation industry. I'm sure you, our erudite listeners, would not be surprised to hear that the number and economic contributions of women-owned firms continues to rise at rates higher than the national average. And that rate has actually increased since the recession. Yes, women are now the majority owners of 38% of the country's businesses. So what better topic to discuss as it relates to our business in the presentation world? Today, Lori Collar and I are joined by an industry icon who owns her own business and just happens to be the global leader behind some of the most influential and visual messages in business and culture. Really?
Yeah,
exactly. So today it's just women of design. There's not going to be a Nolan or Troy. I'm joined, like I mentioned, by Lori Collar at TLC Creatives. And Lori, thank you for jumping in front of the microphone and collaborating on this topic. I believe most of everyone who listens will know you, but why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, thank you. And yes, I'm the other half of TLC. Troy and I have been working and building our business together for well over 20 years. But last time I joined the podcast, Sandy, I believe I sat in your chair, so to speak. And Troy and Nolan and I were discussing typography. So this time I love that we've given the guys the day off because as Sandy mentioned, we are so excited to have Nancy Duarte of Duarte Design join the presentation podcast for our Women of Presentation Design conversation. And Nancy, I'm certain everyone listening has heard your name, perhaps heard you from your TED Talk or the multiple times you've been at the Presentation Summit, let alone reading any of the amazing books you've written on the subject of presentations. So, Nancy, can you please introduce yourself to us?
Oh, well, I'm Nancy Duarte, and I have a pretty large firm. We have 140 people headquartered in the Silicon Valley, that we have a group of about 8 in New York now. And yeah, we've been doing this for 30 years. Last week was our 30-year anniversary at this business.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's a long time. That's older than half your listeners probably. It's like, but I still have a lot of energy to keep going. So
absolutely. Well, tell us how you got started. I mean, years ago, I think you told me, and I want everyone else to know.
Yeah. So the lesser known secret is that my husband actually started the business as a technical illustration firm in 1988. So that's why we are now 30 years old. And he started to, I joined him in 90 and got so much business for him to do. I kind of did the sales, the marketing, the client facing strategy and all of that, that he got carpal tunnel syndrome. I know.
Good
it's
job.
So terrible.
Good job.
So he couldn't do the design part anymore. So he took on IT and finance and all those very, not very artful kind of roles. I, like a couple years in, came in kind of as CEO. It's funny because he was like, I have this vision. I think this could be a real business. I think this Macintosh thing is going to be a big deal.
Oh.
And I'm like, dude, these personal computers are stupid. I work on a real machine. It's called a mainframe, and I work at one at work, and nobody's going to buy these things, right?
Oh, wow.
I mean, we lived in poverty. I mean, we were like probably the only people in a 3-mile radius of us that had a computer. He worked all summer long and moved furniture to save money to buy this little tiny Mac. And he just had this. And I worked my butt off to abort his dream. I thought it was the stupidest thing for 2 years. I'm like, this is the stupidest idea. So finally I gave an ultimatum, and I'm like, I piled up all his resumes and told him to go out and get a real job. And he begged me. He's like, twice in our marriage, he's had to kind of fall on his knees and beg me to change his mind on something really important to him. And he got on his knees. He goes, please, please read a Macworld magazine. Just please read one. I think this is a real thing. And so I read it, and I was like, well, maybe it is. If I can sell it, you can keep it. But if I can't sell this, you're getting a real job. And like, his resumes were piled up. So
you can sell anything.
Right, kind of, right?
I
sell ice to an Eskimo. So he, so I did. I made 3 calls in one afternoon to NASA, Tandem, which is now HP, and Apple, and we won business at all 3. So I was like, oh, so I joined him. I had kind of lost that argument, never had to send his resumes out, and then worked him to the bone.
Wow. So what was your pitch to the companies?
Yeah. So what was interesting is, like I said, I mean, there's a great movie. I got to think of what it's called, but it talked about how there was this little window of time of about 2 years where real graphic designers also thought that the Macintosh and PCs were toys, and that nobody would ever really be able to do graphic design on these stupid toys, right? Because the fonts, they were caught up in the fonts. The fonts were all jaggy. They were bitmappy. They weren't beautiful. And so a pure designer would never use one of these toys, right? So there was this little window of time where we had this computer, we had the skill, and I could go in and sell to people that we could do graphic design on a computer. So for NASA, they did a lot of charts and graphs, but you guys are too young to remember. They would use electrical tape and an X-Acto knife to make the axes, and they would use rub-on letters for all of the stats.
You mean key lines?
Yeah, they would do those. And so I was like, oh, we could do this all digital in half the time, you know, kind of a thing, making up these statistics, because I didn't know. We just wanted the business. We were $15 an hour, and we just wanted all the business we could get. And so same with Tandem. I'd read something in that Macworld magazine, and I didn't realize that they're talking about technology that's going to come out. I thought it was already out. And so we talked them into that we could take a photo of the backside of their big computers, and that Mark could trace over it, and it would be anatomically perfect. because it would be traced from a photo. And they were like, sold. And it was like our first real big contract. It was like $16,000. It was our biggest. That was more money.
I love it. I love it.
That was more money than I used to make in a year. And we got it in one contract. Well, you couldn't really do that. So Mark had to eyeball it. So we went in, we took photos, and then we had to print them out really big. And he had to look at the photo and then do it just by eyeballing. Wow. We never told him that we never could really trace. Oh, because this was like freehand. They didn't even have Illustrator. So it's just, it was just using, like, there was a void. And people knew the hope of a computer. And we're these kind of young digital upstarts, kind of, we didn't care that graphic designers thought the tools were too crude. And we just jumped in and the window. It was like, a lot of people say it's serendipity. But in the way, that's how I feel. Like the timing, the window, being in the valley, all that stuff added up into opportunity for us.
You could be featured in Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000.
I would love that. I just was talking about Malcolm's podcast today.
Oh, wow. Yes. I mean, it's a similar story.
So fantastic.
Yes.
A little bit, huh? That's funny.
Well, it's so funny, Nancy. I think I'm just a few years behind you because during that time I was in design school, we learned how to make charts out of tape and all the paste stuff and stuff. I actually bought my own Mac. They didn't even teach computers, but I taught myself. And it came a few years later, they started, teaching computer stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well. But, that's funny.
Yeah. But unlike you, I actually started in design and went through school, started in the print industry for years, loved it. But I got so busy with my freelance. Troy started, helping me in the evenings and eventually helped me full time. And then we had a fateful call one day. Someone called Troy, a friend of a friend through another company, and basically just wanted to know if we knew anyone who knew how to do presentation design. And he said, of course. And I said, great. Do you want to come work for 3 weeks in Phoenix at a resort for this company? And he said, sure. And so sure enough, that night he downloaded PowerPoint and Keynote and figured it all out. And he was out the door the next week and the rest is history.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm kind of a blend. I grew up in the Twin Cities. Grew up. Here I am, Nancy. I kind of think I'm older than you.
I don't know. I'm ancient. I buy really awesome hair dye, so it's a little deceptive.
I am Twin Cities ad agencies. I worked for business consumer brands like 3M Healthcare and Porsche. So I was exposed to great creative from ad agencies like Campbell Mithun. Carmichael Lynch, I worked for both of those, as actually on the Porsche Cayenne launch, when I decided that I just couldn't do the agency thing anymore. I had two little kids at home. I was in a meeting one day. I was sitting in the front of the room and I looked back and I saw all these younger people who didn't have children, who didn't have to commute an hour downtown from the suburbs every day. And so I quit. I quit cold turkey. Had no idea what I was going to do. I went. So what have you heard of Creative? Is it called Creative Group? They're Robert Half subsidiary.
Yep.
And I thought at the time I was just an account executive, not just, but I wasn't on the creative side. I was just exposed to this awesome creative. But I did a lot of new business pitches. I did a lot of PowerPoint presentation. Anyway, the next day after leaving cold turkey, I went to the creative group. I thought if they can farm out creatives, they can farm out an account exec. I thought I wanted to continue being an account exec. Well, I happened to have PowerPoint whiz written at the bottom of my resume. And they said, oh, go to American Express Financial Advisors. They need you. And like Lori said, the rest is history. From there on, it was
one thing
after another, word of mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're still my client, by the way. They're Ameriprise now, but they're still my client.
That's awesome story.
You know what? That first client is also still our client. So
that's and so is mine.
Yeah.
So is mine. Well, except NASA. We had we fired
him. Well, you got them all at the same time. So
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so should we get into some nitty gritty about our businesses?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what kind of businesses do you have? How do you run it? What's your official and unofficial position? For example, I'm an S Corp. Lori, what do you guys do?
We are a California S Corp as well.
Okay.
As am I.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So we're all triplets here.
Yep. I'm registered in Minnesota, of course. And I'm the CEO and the secretary and all those things. And my husband, Jeff, is an unpaid director, which proved to be a very good thing because one of my largest clients happens to be his employer.
Oh, wow.
He didn't get me the business, but he happens to work there. So we went through 6 months of having to prove that he would not benefit from that business relationship. So thank goodness he was unpaid.
Interesting. Anyway. Very good. Well, I'm the CEO and the CFO, and we have Troy as president and secretary. That's the official side of things. We kind of joke. In reality, I'm the creative director, the head of HR, head of accounting. And they also say I'm the chief snack food organizer. Troy, I know, right? Some cool stuff. Troy is absolutely our head of sales, our marketing director, definitely our technology guru. And to quote the job title of a dear friend, he is our chief troublemaker.
And with endless energy. I know no human being with the energy that man has.
It's very true. Very true.
Oh my gosh.
How funny. So I'm a CEO. We are an agency and we also have an academy. And I have, I think, 5 people on my exec team. And my husband is 49% owner. I'm 51% owner. And Mark recently retired somewhat. He comes in twice a week and still is on the exec team. And he's a fine artist. He's back to being who he was born to be. So he's painting fine art.
That's awesome. Yeah, and
the ownership thing, I know we'll get into in a little bit, but we were 50-50. And then I had customers call wanting me to be an owner. And mm-hmm. so when we get into that section, that's a super interesting story. But that's how we're structured.
Very cool. Do you still actively design, Nancy?
I never was a designer. I was always kind of strategy content, like I could swizzle content, but I full confession, I've never even really written a talk for a client either. I always kind of swizzle them. And so I design my own stuff that's mm-hmm. like, then I have to be, I have herds of designers because they do such beautiful work. So I have them, I do quick conceptual things mm-hmm. and can lay down like lines and shapes and connections. So I'm a conceptual thinker, I guess is probably the best way. So I create courses, conceptually come up with the models. And then right now my deck is in design, getting designed by my real designers. So I don't think it's a good use of my time to make things beautiful when right. I need to get the words and the concepts out is a higher use of my time.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. How about you, Lori?
I do still design, but I would say not as much as I'd like to sometimes. I'm guessing I spend maybe 50, even 75% of my time managing projects and tending to business stuff like accounting and general HR. But I sometimes lump the creative director hat that I wear into that time. So, but mm-hmm. there's also seasons too. You know, mm-hmm. fall and spring are busy seasons. So that's when I'm doing more company management. And then when things slow down, then I get to grab a project and really dive into it.
How many employees do each of you guys have? Because I don't have that. I'm sorry, I interrupted kind of. I didn't want to derail your conversation, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we're currently at 8.
That's cool. That's a fun size.
And I subcontract. I have one full-time project manager, and then I subcontract all of the creative team members.
Well, and we, in a sense, we represent a nice diversity here. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Three different sizes. So that's pretty cool.
Well, and recently I stepped back into my design role more full time. My business was really growing and I found myself managing people and events and I wasn't comfortable in that role. I could have hired somebody else to do it, I guess, but I really missed doing the design. So, I'm back into it and working hands-on in all the presentations, most of the presentations, I should say.
That's awesome.
I guess I'm fortunate. I like a little bit of both worlds. I love the design, but I do love the management. But I was going to mention earlier, there are some clients that are mm-hmm. my favorite clients. You know, we are fortunate. Barbie is one of someone that I love working with. I've worked with her executive and management team for years. And I will typically snag those projects when I can, just because I want to keep my fingers in it. And, you know, I've got a good pulse on her style, if you will. So,
you know, I used to say that, okay, I'll start working with this customer. I'll get I'll be the face of the company and do the work and make sure that everything's established and then turn it over to others to carry on. And I found I couldn't let go.
It's good to know yourself. There's nothing wrong with it. That's like my husband. He's like, I'm doing accounting and IT and I'm hardwired to be an artist.
Yeah.
And yeah. Smart.
See, I've got Troy who will say, would you pass that along to the design team? I'm like, okay, yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Good. Very good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We have a good partnership.
So we're all women owned, run our own businesses. There are designations, I guess, not legal, certifications. And tell me what that means. What is that certification, that designation as women owned? Are there any advantages to it? Have you found anything like that?
Well, I'll start just by saying there are a variety of women-owned designations, and they can vary by state. They could be federal. They could also be from different organizations that you're getting your designation from. For example, Sandy, I know that you and I both hold women-owned certifications, but mm-hmm. I'm certified through the state of California, where I'm pretty sure you worked with I forgot the name of the women's organization to get certified through them, and that has its own set of advantages.
Yeah.
And then you asked, I can say being women certified has not necessarily brought in any new clients yet. We've been certified for over a year, but it has made some of our existing clients very happy. Several corporations that we work for are now thrilled because we can add our certification to their database. So many of these corporations, I'm sure many are aware, specifically in our case, the auto industry, have mandates from the government to do business with a certain percentage of minority and disadvantaged mm-hmm. businesses. So we are helping them essentially up their percentage.
Meet that goal. Yeah.
Exactly. And then mm-hmm. if you do work for the government, this is especially true. In fact, being certified in California opens up a huge door for us to get in on government contract work. That being said, it's a lot of time and effort. So we haven't traveled very far down that path yet, mm-hmm. but we are certainly eyeing that path. We've got the brochures and the trail maps. And then finally adding that little logo and that designation to our website or cards and all that. That's, you know, pretty cool too. I like mm-hmm. it.
Nancy, I'm pretty sure you're certified, right?
Yeah. It's been an interesting process. We avoided it because I really felt like, you know, Mark started it and I had to, you know, I clawed at him telling him it was a dumb idea for so long. I felt he deserved the 50% from all my verbal abuse. Clients had asked us, hey, because people knew that I was running it. And one of the things about getting certified is a lot of people try to work the system. So what'll happen is maybe the husband really runs it and the wife's a stay-home mom. And then they try to get, you know, the benefits of being woman-owned when they're really not. So they take it very serious. They come in, they interview your staff, they interview your customers, and they want to know who's really running the place. And so even though I was really running the place, I thought it was kind of offensive almost that we were actually 100% diverse supplier. Mark's Hispanic, so he's a minority and I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why can't we just be 100% mm-hmm. diverse supplier? But you have to be mm-hmm. one or the other. So we either would have to go Hispanic or we would have to go female. And it made more sense for us to go female owned. So what happened was we were 50-50. I had to actually purchase 1% from my husband. And it could not be from money that I had actually made at the business. So it meant I know it's crazy. We had to have someone come and value the business, and that costs you money. And then I had to like take inheritance that I proved I got from my grandma and cash out my vacation, which I had weeks and weeks of, I had enough right there just with all the vacation I didn't take. So I had to cash it out, put it in a bank account and physically write a check to my own husband to buy 1% so that we could officially get certified as a woman-owned business. And I did it for the same reasons, which was my clients were asking, Apple, Cisco, all of them. They were like, hey, we spend a lot with you and mm-hmm. it would help us prove to the government that we are being a diverse, you know, company and hiring diverse people if you would do this for us. So I did. And then about 2 years in, I got a call from Cisco and they had handpicked a handful of their diverse suppliers to invest in. So I got put in at Cisco into what's called a protege program. And they assigned me with an executive to help me kind of navigate the labyrinth. Like they would tell me, here's these structures, who do you want to meet? And they would make an executive introduction, which was so cool. But the big thing they did for me was they sponsored me. They had a partnership with UCLA and they paid for me to get my MBA from from UCLA, and they vouched for me that my 25 years in business was worth my undergrad. So I haven't gotten like more sales because I'm certified, but it was a way to appreciate my customer base because they asked me to do this.
Unbelievable. I mean, believable. It's just wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you guys go, you know, there's a ton of, you know, every big brand, you can submit your certification. There's a place to submit that you're certified and they'll consider you as a supplier. I've never seen any fruit from that. Like I had someone literally, because you get the list of every company that has a diverse supplier program. Have you guys done any of that work and seen any of that pay off?
I think it's exactly the same for all three of us. I've never had anyone call me and say, as a woman-owned business, we'd like you to bid on a project. But my larger clients are very grateful that I already have that certification and that they can add me to their list. So
yeah, they create lists of all the companies that support diverse suppliers. But I haven't, like you said, I haven't really like won business because I'm a diverse supplier, you know?
Not yet. I'd like to think, though, that our industry is starting to grow and people are becoming aware of, you know, presentation design. So, but same thing, you go in there and they are looking for that. You're not on their list of your only hope of getting in is to get in front of an executive of someone that's a decision maker. And if they understand what you do and understand how you can benefit them, and it's usually at more the executive level, then you can get in.
You know, and I don't want to discourage anyone out there from doing it. Nancy, just so you know, you inspired me to do it. I was just so intimidated by it. I remember you announcing it on Facebook, I think it was. And I thought, I'm going to do that. Well, I was so intimidated. It took me 2 years to...
Why did it take so long?
I don't know. Once I did it, it was easy after that. And you know, this year, so that took me 2 years. I think this year it took me not even 2 hours. It's so easy.
It's intense. That's something people need to know. And they freak you out. So I hired a consultant. I paid her $2,000 to shepherd me through the process because she said, you screw up once, it's hard to recover. So one time, and they send these certified letters and you have to respond within certain time frames.
They come to your office.
I had this receptionist who was OCD. There was something actually kind of wrong with her. And what she did is nobody knew she was hoarding all my mail. And so once we let her go and they opened up, like she had drawers and drawers, every single piece of mail I got in six. And I kept saying, God, I'm not getting magazines. I'm not getting, one of them was, one of the things she hoarded was my certified diverse supplier. She signed for it and everything. So I lost my certification for 1 year.
No.
And like you, I was like, no, my God, once you lose it, they say you don't get it back. It's just terrible.
Oh, I think it was that. It was that. Nothing by itself was difficult to do because I'm an S Corp, and in the early days, we had to provide board of director minutes. Now they just say, as a small business, I've elected not to hold annual shareholder meetings or board of director meetings. So it's a lot easier that way too. But in the beginning, it's like, oh, really? It's Jeff and me. And I had to write meeting minutes and the whole thing.
So one thing that might be encouraging is that, you know, we just went through the process a couple of years ago, and Nancy, same thing. We had to provide tons of documentation and so on and so forth. And it did feel a little bit like, hey, come on, I went to school for design. I'm the woman. This was me. You know, but we went through the process. However, I found out about our local small business development center, and they walked me step by step through the whole process for free. It's one of the services that they provide to the community. I had to attend a 2-day certification class, so I had the appropriate background, and it took time to gather documents, but it wasn't too painful. But again, I took advantage of our local small business development center to do all of that, which is pretty awesome. And it didn't hurt. It just took some time.
Well, it was nice to have somebody guide you. Both of you had someone guide you through the process. That was smart. That was very, very smart.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about the presentation industry in general. I kind of know the answer to this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on our industry being more women or men centric.
I don't have a lot of, I put 50-50. I don't know that, I don't see it. I think a lot of women drop out when they have kids, and that bums me out.
Yeah.
But I don't No, I didn't have an answer for that one. So you answer.
Well, statistically, we are almost 50-50. You know, Nancy, that the Presentation Guild does an annual salary survey, and we haven't published this year's yet, but it's soon to come out. And the information that we've pulled from our respondents is that our industry is nearly 55% women, and that's globally. In the United States, and I have stats in the United States, that puts us in line with the design industry, the graphic design industry as a whole, where 54% of the designers are women. But in the UK, it's only 40% women. So here in the US, we're a little more assertive that way. Yes, yes. Hmm. Now, that's the stats, but what do you think about anecdotally women in this business?
Well, I think the design industry is very women friendly, and I do think it's women dominated. Troy and I recently attended an AIGA conference in San Diego, and there were 7 women presenters versus only 3 male presenters, which I thought was interesting. And then when I took a step back and looked at the audience, it was definitely women dominated. Drilling down to the presentation industry specifically, though, I am seeing more women in a presentation design role, but I'm still seeing more men on show site. And I don't know, I know Sandy, you're on show site. Nancy, I don't know how often you're, you know, behind the curtains, so to speak, running presentations, but definitely more men on show site.
I think you're right there. You're absolutely right. More men.
But here's what's interesting. I recently read an article in Forbes, and I actually have it written down here. It said, women-led businesses are one of the fastest growing segments of entrepreneurship. Between 2007 and 2016, the number of women-owned businesses increased 45%, according to an American Express report, which I thought was really interesting and very cool.
So do you have any issues you face, male versus female, in your careers? Or if you have, does it bother you? Does it not bother you? I'm just curious.
I here in the Valley, we're all over the news for our gender bias, you know, being anti-female. And maybe it's because I was always an outside consultant, and I've never worked in these more archaic or large systems where, you know, and I never really believed, I just thought, well, if you were tough, you know, I used to think that about females. Well, if you were tough, you would have busted through the ceiling. There's no real ceiling unless you think there's a ceiling. Like, I used to be callous, I think would be the best way to say it. And then I became very close friends with this group, this little cluster of women that, you know, we just fell in love. We call ourselves sisters. And I heard their stories of how terrible it is and how clamped down they were. And then I believed it as true. But I think I was just naive. I mean, even if dudes hit on me, I would never have noticed it. Like, I just don't think I noticed it. You know, I just was so busy. I had a deadline, for God's sake. Oh, you flirted? I didn't even notice, or whatever. Like, I just, you know, we're in a deadline business and you have to optimize every day, especially if you have kids. It's like, I just didn't notice if it happened. And that sounds naive, but I had too much important things to do.
Lori and I were talking about that the other day, and I used to think I was tough. I used to think that men or women couldn't tell me that I couldn't get what I wanted. I remember once working in a marketing department for a high-tech company, and the union wanted to get in. And they were sending direct mail to my home saying that as a woman, I needed their help. That pissed me off. Oh my gosh. I wrote an article. I wrote a letter to the CEO. I said, you know, this is absolutely ridiculous. If I can't get ahead on my own, then blah, 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 blah. As time has progressed, I have not allowed myself to be oppressed, I guess. I probably was naive. I have become more aware, more woke, I guess, understanding it. It doesn't change me, but it gives me more empathy for others. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
It sounds like we're all very similar in that maybe a little bit naive, or I'd like to think really focused on what we're doing and enjoying doing, and we just don't notice it. I mean, I can think back and think to some times when maybe I've been talked down to, or certainly my skills have been dismissed. Once I know I was called Missy. And that kind of bugged me. Nothing bad. But at the same time, I have to say, there have been many times when I have been brought into work with an executive because I'm a woman. And this they've recognized that this executive works better with women than they do with men. I thought that was interesting. Probably our biggest
in a very respectful way. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest woman challenge we have, quite seriously, but in a very funny thing, aside from Troy, it's all women in our office. We have tried to hire men and we've had men in the office, but it just doesn't work. It seems like we've found the best talent in our area out of the ladies in the area. So poor Troy. We've tried to hire guys to keep him company, but
we do have I think we accommodate women well. I do feel that if a female doesn't get to the art director position before she's childbearing years, they tend to not come back. They tend to be the stay-home parent. And so we definitely have a lot of women who have had children and we give them flex time. They get to work from home. And so it's actually a super desirable, you know, place to work because of that. We're pretty generous that way. So that's kind of worked in our favor and we keep them on, but they wind up not being the ones who want to come in the office and have the heavy loads and all of that stuff. So we just have to organize things a bit differently.
I suppose that's still a big, not issue, but just, you know, a lot of women, and it's perfectly fine, want to stay home during those years.
Exactly. So I suppose we should talk about pay. You know, I happen to have the stats, and one thing I've learned is that unlike the graphic design industry, where the median annual earnings of women is 20% lower than men, gender in our industry, in the presentationists, annual earnings are equal. They're on par, whatever. It doesn't matter, male or female. We make the same thing. And I also read an article recently that said, as women entered that graphic design industry, the overall salary pay rate went down.
Huh.
So, what? Yeah, I know. So I'll clarify. In graphic design industry, women make 20% less than men. As women went into that industry, the overall averages went down.
Okay, well,
because women were making less than men.
So that corresponds to an article I read a while back. It was either in Communication Arts, maybe it was print, and it discussed this. And the article basically, in a definite recap here, suggested that one core reason for the pay gap is that in the interview phase, men will typically, they'll negotiate, they'll ask for more money, they'll bring it up as a topic, whereas women typically take what they're offered. They don't negotiate. And you know what? That rings true for me. I don't think, thinking back to the jobs I've had in the past, I don't think I ever negotiated. Shame on me, but I just took what they gave me.
Well, I did. When I worked in the ad agency world, I remember that my first pay raise, I moved from being on the industry side to the ad agency side, and my first pay increase was only 4% or something. And I said, I'm insulted. I could laugh you out of the room. I was used to 10 and 11% pay increases, which I know now are really rare. But so I don't know. I've always been a pusher.
Oh, that's why I love you.
I don't have much to say about pay. We are, we have bought all kinds of tools recently because the pay in the Bay Area specifically is completely out of control. You know, you get a fixer upper for about $3.8 million here. So it's really kind of, we're having to do some interesting things like delocate employees, let them work where they want, and do some just clever, even just retention things. So I think our pay, one of the reasons I don't participate, maybe I should participate in the surveys, because our salaries are so skewed here in the Bay Area. They're paid high, but they can't own a home. It's crazy, crazy. And then our competitors are more the public companies that just hunt and hunt and hunt my employees. And so I feel pleased and grateful that as many have, you know, hung on as have. So, yeah.
Well, that's our salary survey. We do indicate that the bulk of presentation designers or presentationists, as we call them, work on the East and West Coast. And we also acknowledge that they're probably driving up the overall salary for the industry.
And there's a huge difference between being a freelancer versus working as an employee versus owning a company and having to pay employees. So like you were saying, Nancy, with your overhead, I mean, overhead alone is interesting. We probably all have different types of overhead. I mean, if you have employees, you're paying, you know, your taxes and probably some medical benefits. And then let's talk about you're paying for all the software subscriptions, let alone the office space and the lighting. And it just, the list goes on. Versus a freelancer, gosh, maybe I should go back to freelancing. You know, they probably work in their house. And
yeah, I mean, we have to pay so much money just to comply to our MSAs. The amount of security, and I mean, I have to hire someone every year just to hack into my own network to make sure it's secure. Like, I mean, I have massive amounts of overhead.
And your contracts require that you do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we have some of the biggest secrets in the world and you can't. Yeah.
Where I can say, I'm sorry, but I don't have that kind of information. And so please take that out of your contract. Speaking of that type of thing, do you mind if we just spend a few minutes talking about switching gears a little bit about the nitty gritty of running your business? Like, how do you tell us about, Nancy, start with, I don't know, accounting, human resources, legal, you pick.
Yeah, we've been a bit stuck for about 6 years. I had a gal that ran HR for a long, long time. She was one of my best friends. And yet we didn't have the proper performance systems and job descriptions, and people weren't doing regular, development plans and conversations and one-on-ones. And it was just killing us. I mean, that's one of the things that's really key to employee happiness. And so I actually had let her go. I couldn't even believe I did it to kind of upgrade. And then my upgrade turned out to not be an upgrade. And so about, I guess it's been 3 months ago, I hired this whip of a, she's just a whip. She's done more in her 8-10 weeks here than all 30 years combined in putting energy into HR. And we're a people business. I mean, having HR at the executive table where they are leaning in and getting it and having the conversations and getting the deadwood out and making us a high performing team. It's been a shock to the system a little bit because we've been a family for a long time and we just keep, you know, sometimes dragging deadwood along with us. And now we're like, you know what? We have to be leaner and meaner and high performance. And so we just put all that in. And I'm telling you, it took me way too long to get here, way too long. Wow. And I would say that this is the single most important decision I have made in a long, long time. So I'm very, finally, 30 years it took me.
But you're learning every day. I mean, seriously, I know you've been trying, like you said, for the last 6 years or whatever it was, but you finally found the right person, the right fit. Yeah. That was the challenge.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sandy, what about you?
Well, I have an itty bitty business. You guys' standards, my account executives manage initial client relationships and me. I need to be managed. That's the one thing. I cannot be creative if I'm not managed. And that, I think between that and the bookkeeper I hired day two of my business were the smartest things I've ever done. I manage all of my accounting on QuickBooks.
Amen.
Yep. When I was an account executive in the ad agency world, that was the worst part of my job, was billing my clients. Even with QuickBooks, I would never bill my clients if I didn't have a bookkeeper. So, you know, I know it seems like a no-brainer, and Nancy, with a business like yours, you've got systems in place, but even a small business like mine, if I want to get paid for what I'm doing, I have to have these systems in place. And I would encourage anyone to have a project manager, or some people would call them a personal assistant, have a bookkeeper and use it, an electronic accounting system that your bookkeeper can access and bill and your tax accountant can access. Those are just some things that I've learned over the years.
What you're saying is, as a woman, even though we are known for being able to multitask, and I think that's very true, we still need to know when to bring other people in. And Troy's probably somewhere just fainting hearing me say that, because I always fight giving up control of things. But I'm a huge advocate for QuickBooks. We use QuickBooks Online. And that, like, just like you said, you know, Troy or I can invoice, our accountant can access it, tax accountant can access it. It's been great. And the other big thing for us was project management.
Yes.
Several years ago, we tried 2, 3, 4 different systems and really invested in each one. We finally settled on Workflow Max, which is by Xero. And it, for us and for our size, it has been amazing.
In fact, I need to write that one down.
Yeah. Well, we could probably have a podcast just about project management, but I'll say on the business side of design project, I think we'll all agree project management is huge.
It is. And that's how I can focus on being creative.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys separate out account management from project management?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
We should.
Account management is more face-to-face with the client and the project management is behind the scenes.
And you know what? I should say I misspoke. I think we do, because I would look at it. Troy and I are more of the account managers, and we do. We have what we call a project coordinator. She's amazing. And she does do the nitty gritty and keeps us on track with keeping everything organized, the status of projects. So I take it back. Yeah, actually we do. Huh. Good job.
Yeah. So we actually kind of go back and forth sometimes because, as you know, our businesses are also kind of quick turn. It's not like you have these big, long web projects that are 8 months long and stuff like that. So we have account people, we have project people, and then we have a hybrid role, where it's the hybrid role that's dedicated to a brand. So if we have, you know, a lot of people working on one account, then the project manager is the account manager. So that's how it is now. Okay. But we always look at that thinking, is this efficient? You know? So that's what it is.
I think this has been amazing. I really, yeah, I appreciate the different perspectives. I love how similar we all are in some ways and how
it's been fun.
How our business, how our businesses function and what we do. Sandy, thank you for being an active part of this podcast every month and representing us women. I certainly appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Lori, this is the first time we've been able to do this together. It's so great to have Troy's business partner and partner in life working so closely with you. And Nancy, I couldn't thank you enough for your time, and you're wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Hopefully we can do it again. Hopefully I'll be able to see you sometime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to pro and tech tips. Nancy, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, I have this little pet tool I use because I travel so much. It's called Pocket. I don't know if you guys use it, but I'm a hummingbird. So if I'm zipping away and something comes in and an article comes up, I'll just read it or I'll just zip around. And now I put it in this tool in my browser. I just click a button and then it's there. It's on my phone. It's everywhere. So I can get on an airplane and sit and read through all the articles I saved because I do a lot of research. And so that way it's all there and then I can consume it and it's handy dandy. And then I stay focused on what I was supposed to focus on instead of getting all sucked into the interwebs.
That is so cool. So is that, it's Hummingbird? It's an app?
No, it's called I'm the Hummingbird. The app is called getpocket.com. It's called Pocket. Yeah. And it shows up on your phone. It's so cool.
I like that.
Yeah. Put it in your pocket and then it's always there. It's in your pocket. And then you can read it, you delete it, you manage them. And then I can do things offline on my phone and not even be connected to the internet because it caches it on my phone in the app. It's cool. That's my pro tip.
That sounds amazing.
Awesome. I love it.
All right. Well, I've been working on a presentation that I'll be giving at the Presentation Summit this fall, and it centers around approaching typography and PowerPoint from a trained graphic designer workflow type of perspective. Can you tell I like typography? So as I've been doing some research, I have come across a handful of really great websites that I've added to my OneNote inspiration notebook. And for any of those that know Julie Terberg, she keeps a OneNote inspiration notebook, which I absolutely love. And so I guess I'm just letting you know that I love keeping all my inspirations in OneNote, but I will share some of these website links in the show notes. Just some great, just take 5 minutes and kind of refresh your brain with some great examples, posters, websites, all sorts of fun stuff I've run across.
This was a blast, you guys.
This is Lori from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. I certainly enjoyed taking Troy's place this week, but never fear, Troy and Nolan will be back next time. And of course, check us out at tlccreative.com and Troy's blog, thepowerpointblog.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at Presentation Whiz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as PPT Whiz.
Bye, everyone. I had a blast. You can find me at Duarte.com, Twitter at Nancy Duarte or at Duarte. And I connect to everyone on LinkedIn that connects to me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.